Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry and to discern and deconstruct what they do and what they know to help you grow your agency faster. I'm honored to introduce our guest today. This is an episode that I will encourage everybody to listen to. There are times where I feel like some topics are highly specialized and might be extremely interesting to some people, and some people maybe could take it or leave it. This one, for those of you who are serious students of the industry, in fact, anybody who is a professional in the industry should listen to my conversation with Dr. Robert P. Hartwig. I'm going to share a few highlights from his career, one of the most remarkable careers in the industry, so that you'll have a sense of, first of all, where he's coming from, but also how well grounded he is in the industry, what makes the industry work, the players in the industry, the forces that are driving the industry. For this particular topic, I couldn't find a better guest. When I saw that Bob was on the agenda for NAMIC, the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies conference, and I saw his topic, I thought I needed to get him on my podcast schedule. He and I have had conversations over the years. I interviewed him some years ago, long before this podcast and probably before there were podcasts. And at that point, not only did I find him to be incredibly intelligent, but I got great feedback on that particular conversation. This was probably back in the days, after the days of the cassette of the month, but perhaps when I was delivering a CD of the month. So that puts it a little bit into an historical perspective. In any case, a tremendous career. He is the past president of the Insurance Information Institute. He ran that from 2007 to 2016. He originally joined the Institute in 1998 as an economist and became their chief economist in 1999. And I knew that Bob had left. I didn't know where he went. I was thrilled to see that he was still in the industry as a clinical associate professor of risk management, insurance, and finance at the University of South Carolina. Prior to working at the Institute, he was the director of economic research and the senior economist with the National Council on Compensation Insurance, NCCI. He received his PhD and Master of Science in economics from the University of Illinois. He is the author and co-author of papers on our industry that have appeared everywhere. And he was awarded the NAMIC's Chairman's Award in 2010. And he was the recipient of a research award from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Institute for Legal Reform. You may have seen him on TV. You may have read his name quoted in any number of different publications. He's been quoted in, among others, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, USA Today, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Financial Times, Business Week, Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, CFO, Fortune, Forbes, The Economist, and other publications throughout the world. Excuse me. He's also appeared and continues to appear regularly on TV, including programs on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, CNBC, Fox, PBS, and BBC. Some people would say that Dr. Hartwig is the spokesperson to the public and to legislators and to Congress for our industry. In any case, he's one of the most intelligent people I've had the privilege to talk to. Every time we have a conversation, when I am so lucky, I always feel like I just got my education just got polished. I just got a little bit smarter, and I hope you feel the same way. This is not an interview. If you're looking for quick ways to increase your Instagram followers by next Tuesday, this is not the one. On the other hand, if you are a serious professional, and if you're listening to this podcast, then I know that you are, then it's a conversation that you need to be a part of, because he shares a perspective on the industry that very few people have. He has for many, many years sits in a position in the industry that allows him to see what are those forces that are driving our industry, where is it going, and to some extent, clearly, strategically, as an industry, how do we need to respond? So if you want to be smarter, stay tuned. And now it is my privilege and my pleasure to introduce you to this conversation with Robert P. Hartwig, PhD, CPCU. Bob Hartwig, thank you so much for joining us. It's an honor and a privilege to have you with us today. Thank you.
Well, very glad to be here, Michael. There's a lot going on in this business today, and so happy to talk about some of those things with you.
Well, so in terms of an understanding of the industry as an industry, sort of the big picture, frankly, I can't think of really anybody in the world that I would rather talk to about it than you. So thank you for joining us. First thing I'm going to ask you is a brief thumbnail of who you are, what makes you tick, and your career in the industry, because it's been stellar.
Well, thank you very much. Well, for the past 2 years, I've been a professor of finance, risk management, and insurance here at the University of South Carolina. And I'm also the director of the Center for Risk and Uncertainty Management here. So these first 2 years have been great, helping to mint the next generation of talent for the insurance industry and for the business community overall. I very much enjoyed it. And that came after a 23-year career in the private insurance sector, and the last 10 years of which I was president of the Insurance Information Institute, a large industry property casualty trade association. And I had had stints prior to that as that organization's chief economist, but prior to that at Swiss Re and also NCCI, where I did in fact work on where I in fact did actuarial work for about 5 years.
Ah. Yeah, okay. So you do know this industry. Can you give a very short thumbnail on what the Institute is?
Yes, the Insurance Information Institute.
Uh-huh.
Right. So where I worked for 18 years, 8 years as chief economist and then as president. Well, the Institute is an industry trade association, and at that time we had close to 70% of the industry's industry as members, at least as measured by premium volume. And what we did is we effectively explained what insurance does and how it works to the world. And that could take the form of appearing in the media and helping the average person understand insurance on a day-to-day basis or in the wake of disasters or immediately before a disaster might occur. And, there are just so many experiences during that time, everything from 9/11 to Katrina to Sandy to wildfires and events all around the world, and day-to-day advice, how to save money on auto insurance and homeowners insurance or properly insure your business. And so it was an extraordinary time and an extraordinary job. I enjoyed it very much. And organization has been around for about 60 years, and it's a complicated industry.
Right.
Many people don't understand it, and so the industry has always felt there's a need for a voice of the industry, and the Insurance Information Institute filled that role, again, whether it was through the popular media or on up to testifying before congressional committees.
So when national media had a question about insurance, and there were certainly a lot during your reign, they turned to Barb Hartwick a lot, didn't they?
Well, they did, and I was very pleased to play that role and to be effectively the industry's chief economist and chief spokesperson during my time there. I very much enjoyed that. I did a lot of writing during that period of time. Beyond the media, I would make close to 80 to 90 presentations around the world at company events or association events or conferences on the topic of insurance or the financial market situation around insurance or the legal and regulatory environment or, again, sometimes in legal cases or testimony before Congress. So a wide variety of demands on my time and forcing me to kind of be a jack of all trades, all lines, all across the U.S., and that keeps you really, really busy.
And, well, I'm sure it did. So the other day I was looking at the agenda for the NAMIC conference. I don't know if it was their annual conference or their management conference. And I noticed that there was an economy power session that was on the agenda. An insurer's guide to what's happening now and what's on the horizon. The session will focus on trends, challenges, and opportunities in the property casualty insurance industry. Our speaker will provide a comprehensive overview of the industry and give insight on what has happened during the past year, as well as what might be in store for the year ahead. So when I saw that that was you as the speaker, I thought, oh, I got to track Bob down again. And so you were very, very gracious to give me an opportunity to pick your brain. And it seemed to me there's really nobody better in the industry than you to talk about the trends and the state of the industry. So let's start with that. If you were going to take a snapshot of how the industry is doing right now, what would that snapshot look like?
Well, the industry is really a picture of strength, and that's a great thing to be able to lead off saying, is that this industry, which is now exceeds $500 billion, in other words, half $1 trillion annually in premiums written, and is growing at about a 4% pace. And despite last year's record catastrophe losses, the industry remains very strong, stable, sound, secure. And that's exactly what everyone wants to hear about the insurance industry.
Well, so if you don't mind me interrupting, now, so during your reign at the Institute, would you always have been able to say that, or were there times where you were more concerned about the strength of the industry?
Well, I during my time, 18 years at the Insurance Information Institute, I had the good fortune of being able to say that the industry was always financially strong, sound, and secure. Of course, there were periods in time when there was somewhat less certainty about how long that might last. So, for example, at the time of 9/11,
right,
where it was very clear this was going to be an enormous loss, the likes of which we had never seen before, while I was confident that the industry could absorb losses in the tens of billions of dollars, and ultimately it wound up being, in today's dollars, about $45 billion in loss. At that
time,
the largest loss ever. The industry had never seen anything like that. Yet I was confident the industry could absorb it. It would be painful, but it could absorb it. I was concerned that, as were many people at that time, that this could be the first of several events, and that we didn't know if there were other attacks that were planned that could be equally as costly. And those could have proved challenging. But likewise, when Hurricane Katrina hit in 2005,
right,
along with a number of other storms, these produced, in today's dollars, somewhere close to $75 billion in insured losses. But at that time, I was substantially more confident because it was easier to understand that risk, the risk of hurricanes. And eventually hurricane season does mercifully come to an end, as it did that year.
Right.
And the industry had the opportunity to recharge its capital banks and adjust in terms of price and if there were any underwriting changes that needed to be made. So, but again, throughout this nearly two-decade span of time, there was never a time when I had to ring an alarm warning people that a large number of insurers were going to go bankrupt and their claims might go unpaid.
Right.
The message I was always able to deliver is that your claim is going to be paid. It's going to be paid in a fair, timely, and expeditious manner. And if you're someone who has to go on CNN and talk about being the nation's economic first responder, believe me, that's the message you want to be able to deliver.
So we started this conversation with your declaration of good news that the industry is strong. Now, if we look below the surface of the water, what's down there? What are some of the trends that might be happening in different lines, in different classes, in different regions?
Well, just to back up one moment,
okay.
The industry has continued to suffer from low interest rates.
Okay.
So... it's still the case that the industry generates less investment income than it did prior to the financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So with investment income being the second largest source of revenue, this remains a stressor on the entire industry, and one which it has not yet completely adjusted to. But you know, beyond that, if we drill down and we look at personal and commercial lines, it's really a tale of two industries almost. We have the industry roughly divided 50-50 in terms of premium, in terms of personal lines and commercial lines. And the reality is that personal lines is seeing growth that is much stronger than commercial lines nowadays.
Why is that?
Well, it's not because the economy is affecting either side of the business differentially. The economy is creating new exposures in terms of cars and homes for personal lines insurers and business property and liability exposures for commercial insurers. The difference is rates. We are seeing renewals in personal lines, both on the auto and home side. Rate renewals are fairly strong nowadays. And they're the strongest we've seen in personal auto in close to 15 years, whereas on the commercial line side of the business, until very recently, renewals were flat and even slightly down. The most recent data suggests they're very slightly up in commercial lines now. This may help the numbers out a little bit in 2018. But there is a growth gap, if you will, between personal lines and commercial lines, with growth in the 6 to 6.5% range for total personal lines premiums, versus maybe about 2% for commercial lines.
Okay, but 6.5% is relatively high. So would you say we are in a hard market?
No,
I
think that what we're looking at in personal lines are rational and reasonable. Price increases that are tied to everything from higher catastrophe losses on the homeowner side to rising or sharply higher auto claim severities and to a lesser degree frequencies. On the commercial line side, what we see is we are seeing some flattening in the market. Because of fairly intensive but still rational competition, and some improvement in key lines such as workers' compensation, which has seen dramatic improvement in the underwriting performance and hence actually seeing very favorable underlying claim frequency and severity trends in some cases. And this is resulting in carriers simply rolling back rates in most states.
Uh-huh.
Because the underlying fundamentals are good. But that said, it is the case that in most commercial lines, until very recently, with the exception of commercial auto, which is up sharply, most lines were either flat or decreasing.
Okay. Let me ask you an amateur's question, which to some extent, I guess, is my job. I think you'd indicated that in auto, severity's up and frequency is down. Now, if I got that right, is frequency down because of technology, and is severity up because of technology?
That's definitely part of it. Severity has been up sharply. Frequency has been up very modestly. The severity, many people believe, is in part due to technology. Vehicles today are more expensive to repair.
Right.
Packed full of sensors and other kinds of electronic equipment that are rather expensive to replace. The labor costs are pretty severe in terms of because of the fact that it isn't, you know, your average Joe Goodwrench with a tool set who can repair these things nowadays. There's a lot of diagnostic equipment and people who are trained in how to calibrate and fix
and
these sorts of technological innovations in vehicles. The frequency is up a bit in part because the economy is recovering.
Okay.
People are driving more. And then there's a part of it that is difficult that is to disentangle. But we know it's part of the story, both on frequency and severity, and that is distracted driving. This is a problem. It exists in personal lines and commercial lines,
yeah.
But the data are scant. Obviously, people don't admit to the fact that they're distracted driving, and very often, when it is the cause or the contributing cause, that's oftentimes unknown or unreported.
Is there an industry best guess on how big of a problem that is?
Well, there are some federal government statistics that suggest that of the 40 or so thousand highway deaths in the United States today, that approximately 10% of them are due to some form of distracted driving.
Not just smartphones.
Not just smartphones. This could be fiddling with your navigation unit. It could even be putting on lipstick.
Or your Big Mac. Okay.
Yes, exactly. But there is no question, however, that the distractions are more evident than ever while driving, particularly texting while driving, and particularly among youthful drivers.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So some of the technologies that are designed to prevent accidents are trying to counterbalance the accidents caused by the other technologies that we're holding in our hand.
Exactly. Were it not for distracted driving and handheld devices, it may be the case that frequency would be falling, and maybe somewhat steeply, but we simply don't see that in the data today. And technology probably has some ways to go before it can effectively overcome the negative dimensions associated with distracted driving.
Okay. Back to what's under the surface. Are there regions of the country that are stronger in insurance, and are there regions that might be suffering?
Well, there are some areas certainly that have been harder, more severely impacted by catastrophes last year. Obviously, Texas, parts of Florida, California with the wildfires, and then people have forgotten about this, but very severe hail events in places like Colorado. But it is when you sort of take a look at the damage on the ground, it is largely the Gulf Coast of Texas and the wildfire impacted areas of Florida, and of course the Hurricane Maria impacted areas of the Caribbean, including Puerto Rico.
Right.
Most people, unfortunately, don't focus on that market so much. It is the but despite the large scale losses in all of these areas, Puerto Rico excepted, we don't really see any disruptions in the market for property insurance or business interruption insurance in these areas. The costs are rising modestly, maybe mid-single digits in some of these areas, whereas outside catastrophe-prone areas, rates might be relatively flat on the commercial property and business interruption side. No real problematic dislocations in terms of lack of availability or sharp spikes in coverage. And that owes to the fact that, again, the industry went into last year's hurricane season and the catastrophe season overall in very strong shape with adequate capital, actually continued to build capital through the end of the year despite the large-scale catastrophe losses. It's also the case that reinsurance capital remains at record levels, and there's also significant right. participation by the catastrophe bond market as well, which is an additional source of capacity. Mm-hmm. And all of this helps to essentially iron out some of the peaks and troughs that perhaps used to occur after major disasters.
Is your sense that ironing out, is that something that you think we can anticipate in the future? I mean, you and I have been in the industry about the same amount of time, I think, and during that time, we've seen some fairly steep and painful hard markets and some really long, slow, soft markets. Has the industry gained intelligence and perhaps tools to help it price insurance in a manner that's going to flatten out some of those market swings?
Well, there's really two things that I think, and three things that have really contributed to the flattening out
okay.
of what we would call the insurance cycle. Better modeling of risk is one of those, that we have a better understanding of how much various types of disasters are likely to cost in various parts of the country.
Right.
And so this translates into more rational pricing and more accurate capacities being purchased in terms of reinsurance programs for companies. So this makes for a smoother and more predictable pattern of losses for insurers and the reinsurers alike. So they're generating a premium that is more adequate, and with increased use of reinsurance or accessing the capital markets, this will wind up creating a more streamlined mm-hmm. or a smoothing of results over time.
Okay.
I interwove two of my first points. The other one, again, is pricing. Pricing today better reflects actual risk than it did, say, 15 or 20 years ago, or certainly 25 years ago when events like Andrew struck. The third factor isn't really all that obvious, and it has to do with the low interest rate environment. And the reason why low interest rates tend to flatten out the insurance pricing cycle is because at one point when interest rates were high, insurers had an incentive to essentially cut prices to generate as much cash flow as they possibly could as quickly
right.
as they could and then invest the money. Today, because of low interest rates, that incentive is diminished. And so even though interest rates are ticking a little bit higher, this incentive for insurers to so-called cash flow underwrite is nowhere near what it used to be, say, in the 70s.
Aha, uh-huh. yeah, all right. So, yes, a little bit less obvious, but it would seem to me. So it would seem that insurance is, for want of a better word, maybe more... It's more right priced.
It's more adequately priced.
Right. Okay. Very good. So a lot of my listeners, Bob, are the principals of insurance agencies or people responsible for the distribution of insurance. What kinds of trends and changes do you see happening on the distribution side?
Well, you know, one of the great pleasures of my years at the Insurance Information Institute and also here in the academic world is my interaction with agents and brokers all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to many of the state agents and brokers associations, and I have a number of them on my calendar right now coming up for the remainder of the year, and as well as for the trade press. They're a group that's always looking to keep on top of the latest trends. But in terms of the distribution side of things, obviously, if you are an independent agent, or even if you're a captive agent, or whether we're talking about a regional or local broker, everyone thinks about the trend moving from brokered business or IA business over to direct. And this has been a fear really for 20 years now, when the first online sites began to appear in the late 1990s during the dot-com boom. A lot has happened then, and what we find now is I think that you can look ahead and maybe discern what the ultimate model will look like. And it's going to be a model that focuses necessarily on the needs and demands of consumers. And what consumers want is a seamless nearly effortless relationship with their insurer. What that means is that they're going to want to be able to interact with their insurer, with that representative of the insurer, meaning the agent, who many individuals view as indistinguishable from the insurer, even if it's an independent agent. It is,
right.
It is their representation of the insurer, and it's the only entity with which they will ever speak with or deal in many cases. And so they want to be able to do that in person. They want to be able to do it by phone. They want to be able to do it online. And far from simply just rolling over and allowing the direct channel to basically usurp all their business, what you see now is agents and brokers have developed, along with their carrier partners, have developed what I call sometimes as a channel fusion or an omni-channel approach. And basically, all this means is that you as a broker, you as the agent, have created a portal, a technology that allows you to communicate with your agent or broker in a very simple, immediate, transparent fashion. And I think there are a lot of work behind the scenes in terms of assuring that agents and carriers all are operating off technology platforms that allow this to happen. Independent agents understand that they need the carriers to help them with this. The carriers and the agents are in this struggle for market share together. There's certainly been some erosion when we look at the particularly private passenger auto. And particularly when we're talking about minimum limits type of coverage, can this sort of thing be purchased online directly with no participation by an agent at all? Yes, that can occur. But at the same time, when you move beyond the sort of highly commoditized business that exists, kind of the low average premium end of the spectrum.
Right.
I think that there remain, both in the personal lines and the commercial line space, plenty of opportunities for agents of every stripe and brokers of every stripe to demonstrate their value. If you think about it on the commercial line side, you can talk about, for instance, new risks that can be insured against. Cyber coverage, for example.
Right.
Now is something that is not just for large businesses, it's for small and medium-sized businesses. Okay, it is incumbent on the agent or broker to make sure that they understand these products, understand the gaps in coverage that exist probably in the majority of the programs that they have in place with their commercial customers. And explain the need for this type of coverage or the need to ensure that such things as floods, which are becoming increasingly common and severe, are insured against. That coverage is available, that it's affordable, and how they can close all of those gaps. And the same thing on the personal line side. After the difficult years of the Great Recession, what we've begun to see is millennials coming out of their parents' basements and getting jobs, buying vehicles, purchasing homes, so on, and all of this is creating more and more demand for insurance products in general, including products offered through independent agents and local brokers.
So a few minutes ago, Bob, you said that the first online insurance was available about 20 years ago, which seems like it's remarkable that it was that long ago. But that was when .com was exploding. It was also about 20 years ago when Bill Gates declared the disintermediation of industries across the world. It sounds to me like you're relatively bullish on the agency system, that you think that there is an ongoing role for the agent to play.
Well, I think I'm bullish because I've seen the agency system and I've seen the independent agent companies not stand still, but adapt.
Right.
And we've seen this not just in insurance, but in other industries as well, such as banking, for example, where there are all kinds of startups that have sought to create banks
right.
that exist virtually only. But it is the case that the big banks out there, whether it's Chase or Citi or Wells Fargo, have looked at this and come back with competitive products and services of their own. They're not standing idly by. And the same thing goes for insurers and brokers and agents. That
so,
are not standing idly by.
Here. Right. It wasn't long ago, but it, I think, preceded InsurTech that fintech startups were attempting to disrupt banks, and then banks embraced fintech and really competed very successfully. Would you say that same trend is happening in insurance right now, that the early InsurTechs were kind of disruptive? And
well, I have to draw a distinction here. Some of the InsurTechs that started off a few years ago, they had a pretty big PR budget, and they claimed that they were going to disrupt the entire industry. And found out it's actually a lot harder to be a purely online insurance company than they thought it would be. I mean, you do need significant insurance industry expertise in addition to the technology to make it work. And in fact, as it turns out, only about 4% of InsurTech startups in the P&C space are actually risk-bearing insurers.
Right.
So what has happened is rather than being usurpers and disruptors, what in fact is happening is InsurTech innovation is almost taking the form of a supermarket of R&D for the insurance industry.
Oh, well said.
So right. What it allows insurers to do, and brokers as well, is to go out and shop in the InsurTech supermarket and look at solutions, usually B2B, you know, business-to-business type solutions that help them with processes related to the processing and payment of claims, and perhaps expedite that. Data analytics is another big area right now. And a lot of the sort of day-to-day operational issues insurers deal with. So early days, most of the InsurTech startups actually came in and thought, well, they'll find a better way to build the distribution mousetrap. And they looked at that big, juicy,
right.
10-11% of all premiums paid that are associated with commissions and brokerage.
Well, and no doubt they were looking at that $500 billion you were talking
well,
about.
Well, multiply that times 10%, and you can see that there's about $50 billion a year that flows directly into the distribution channel. So that looked pretty juicy and tempting to
mm-hmm,
them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's trickier business than they thought if they want to integrate that with an actual insurer. And then when you get down to it, as I mentioned, there have been online portals for the sale of insurance for 20 years. So how do you build a better mousetrap here? Do you have a very, you know, cute-looking graphical user interface or what have you? But that's not really very innovative. And it's not what consumers are clamoring for right now, and it's not really where the money is. The margins are, you know, after startup expenses and so forth, they're relatively thin.
Yeah.
So what we see is, you know, innovation in terms of, you know, analytics, innovation in terms of such things as claims processing. There can be some, you know, assistance that B2Bs could, that InsurTechs can develop on, certainly on the sales side as well. There's discussion about such things as smart contracts whereby you have, for example, an individual files a claim along with some photographic documentation, and there's a artificial intelligence application that would certify that the claim is should be paid, what the amount should be, and then there is, within seconds or minutes, an electronic deposit made in the individual's bank account. So there are solutions like that, and there are also others that are looking to develop risk management solutions, such as the creation of devices that would monitor such things, real-time and continuously, the presence of smoke or moisture or vibrations in a home. So, similarly, technologies in automobiles, all of which would provide the owners of the homes with real-time information about risks, but at the same time would provide insurers with real-time information useful for underwriting purposes.
All right. So, Bob, let's take a look at what this new future might look like, because it sounds like a lot of things we've talked about so far, a lot of things you've mentioned, have been changes driven by some kind of technology. And there are a lot of emerging technologies that are not necessarily designed to change, transform, or disrupt the insurance industry, but by virtue of what they do, they might do that. What do you think our future looks like with things like the Internet of Things or autonomous vehicles and blockchain, let's say, and so on and so forth?
So it has always been the case that the insurance industry has thrived through periods of large-scale technological change that aren't necessarily associated with the industry directly. So if I go back in history,
right,
I think about the Industrial Revolution or electrification of businesses and homes, or I think about the invention of the automobile and the aircraft. All of these certainly displaced some types of insurance revenues. So for instance, when the automobile came online, that was very disruptive to insurers of horses and buggies. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And in the same way that when transportation by rail became more common, that disrupted transportation by steamships. And likewise, as we moved into the era of aircraft and so on. And so that has been a continuous theme throughout the history of the world of insurance. And but insurers have adapted smoothly to the new technological landscape, to the new economic landscape that accompanied each one of these transformations. There have been demographic transformations, the explosion of the U.S. population after World War II and the baby boom generation, and millions of homes and exposures being created. Insurers adapted to all of these things. And so I generally challenge this notion that the industry is one that's kind of backwards and stodgy. If it were that backwards and stodgy, I don't think it would have persevered in its current form for the better part of 350 years. And so as we move into this era of the Internet of Things and autonomous vehicles or commercialized space flight, I think that the industry will find opportunities to grow once again. The Internet of Things is going to generate incalculable amounts of data, for instance,
that
will allow insurers to provide coverage and to provide limits for certain types of risks that before couldn't even be dreamed of, that would allow people to purchase insurance in real time for only the time that they're using a particular product, custom tailored to exactly where they are and how they drive or the type of vehicle they're in and how long they're there, so that the price matches the risk more so than ever in the past. I mentioned smart homes and monitoring devices. You have smart places of work and wearable devices that will help us understand how injuries occur and how to prevent them in the workplace. So these are all areas that are already providing fruitful opportunities and areas for growth for insurers, not just providing pure insurance, but also risk management services.
Some of these technologies are really designed to reduce risk, right?
They are, but you know, that has historically been the case. The workplaces have been getting safer,
right,
for the better part of 75 years. Automobiles have been getting safer for the past half century. And so, but that creates opportunities for insurers as well.
So, and in spite of all of this, the insurance industry is growing faster than the economy, right?
It's growing
a little bit.
Some segments, yeah, or you know, close to what the economy is growing.
Okay.
Overall. The personal line space growing a little faster. Commercial lines a little bit slower.
Right.
But it's certainly keeping pace, and its share of overall economic activity continues to remain, you know, relatively robust and constant. There are more challenges on the life insurance side, certainly, than there are on the P&C side.
So let me ask you a question that is either on the mind of my listeners or should be. So on one hand, it sounds like you're relatively bullish about the industry, and you're pretty encouraging about the industry's ability to innovate, which I think is pretty refreshing. Now, if we go a little bit deeper and we start taking a look at sections or segments of the industry, like the independent insurance agent, just like, let's say, the agent wasn't able to, they're not insuring the aviation industry mostly. I mean, they're not insuring Boeing, okay? Do you think there are some trends that the industry will be able to respond to, but the agent will be left out of? And how do you think the agent will fare in this future?
Well, it's hard to say at this point. The agent could at some point, for example, find themselves largely, quote unquote, left out of kind of lower end, minimum dollar, minimum limit, highly commoditized types of transactions.
Fair enough, and they tend not to be as nearly as profitable or lucrative for the agent.
Exactly.
Okay.
So there's a stronger incentive because these coverages tend to be relatively standardized. There's not a lot of profit in it. There is a lot of incentive to simply, quote unquote, commoditize the product and sell it for as low price as possible, probably online.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that there isn't a role on the back end for the insurer to help with the claims process when these, in fact, do occur. And you could see some commoditization on the lower end of the commercial market, too. Very simple commercial auto type programs, workers' comp programs, potentially. So, yes, those could wind up in the realm of, off the plate of the average independent agent at some point in the future. But that's not where most of the growth is in the future.
Right. Where do you see the growth in the future?
Well, the growth is most likely in the middle part of the market.
Okay.
And also to some extent at the high end of the market. So on the personal line side, you actually have seen very, very strong growth among, you know, high net worth customers. So this particular type of account has proven to be among the most profitable for the major carriers out there, and it generates proportionately a lot of premium relative to the number of risks that are actually in that pool. So making sure that the needs of your high net worth customers are adequately met is a potential source of revenue and loyalty among these customers, who many of whom didn't start out wealthy. They just simply worked hard over a span of many, many years, and
right.
They perhaps have multiple properties, vehicles, homes, even employees at home sometimes, but they may not be adequately insured. That's often the case. That's one area. And again, as the economy continues to grow, this is creating more and more exposures that are associated with a middle class, middle class, whether it's vehicles and whether it's property, people beginning to have children, or eventually, you know, again, wind up having drivers or creating new drivers of the future. So I think that that for pure property casualty insurers within your agency
yeah.
or within your brokerage, having some expertise that can help on the kind of life, health, and wealth management side of the business is something that could be useful in terms of retention of business because as we move through time, I think that one thing that is going to become far more complicated for the average individual, even sophisticated individuals, is in NERA, when you're responsible for most of your own retirement savings, that means you need to accumulate assets, and some of them are going to be physical, some are going to be financial. How do you ensure that you and your family have a secure retirement? And that does require some skills involving familiarity with appropriate investment products and life insurance products.
Got it. All right. Quick question. You had mentioned that there are more challenges on the life side than the P&C side. How would you summarize that?
Well, I think that the life insurers have suffered sort of from an operational standpoint of from low interest rates. And that has definitely hurt them. Hurt them in terms of obviously what they can generate off the premiums they generate. It also hurts them in terms of the interest rate guarantees are now lower than they had once been on a variety of insurance products. In fact, some have had to eliminate that altogether. Long-term care products have been very difficult for life insurers. Many have even gotten out of the business altogether. They've lost so much money in that space. The other thing is that you look at individuals out there today in their prime working age, many have foregone the purchase of life insurance for a couple of reasons, because many people have deferred marriage and deferred childbearing and have fewer children. Those would be some demographic reasons behind this. They've deferred purchasing a home, so therefore, or if they rent, they don't have a mortgage, which would be a primary reason to in fact, purchase life insurance. So these have created some challenges for life insurers into a variety of life insurance products. And if you just move slightly over to the health insurance area, now this is really the wild, wild west over the last 8 or 9 years with the Affordable Care Act. But many brokerages that have a benefits group or division within them have found this to be one of their most profitable divisions.
There is also true in a lot of insurance agencies.
Exactly. And that's because most businesses, while they might feel they can almost do it themselves and understand what they're doing with respect to many of their coverages, I think they throw up their hands when it comes to health coverage. It's very difficult to find consistently affordable quality health care for your employees. Disability coverage as well is somewhat easier, but nevertheless, this market requires the expertise of individuals who truly understand all that is changing in this marketplace. And 2018, 2019 are going to be no different. We could expect major changes in health insurance programs.
Expect it to keep changing. All right, Bob, I have two final questions for you. One, I'll phrase it. It's a little bit ridiculous, but let's say Bob Hartwick wakes up in the morning with all of the knowledge that you've got about this insurance industry as a whole, and you wake up as an independent insurance agent. All right. So now you've got this knowledge of the trends and the forces and the changes and some reasonable predictions about what might happen in the future. How would you respond strategically as an agent based on what you know now?
Well, I think as an independent agent, I want to make sure that that my appointments are with companies that value technology in the following way. And as I described earlier, that I want them to be my partner in helping me communicate seamlessly 24/7, 365 with my customers. I believe firmly that while insurance is a product that is used infrequently and, quite frankly, hopefully never, that doesn't mean that you have to be out of sight and out of mind when it comes to your customers. You don't want the only interaction with your customer to be
It's time for your renewal.
Yeah, okay. When they have a renewal and they're writing a big check or when they've got a
Okay. Hey, what you're saying, by the way, is music to my ears, and our listeners have heard that from me, so I'm thrilled that they're hearing it from you.
Yeah, and so I think there are increasingly technological opportunity. For instance, in the future, there can be products available, say, in the homeowners, in the auto space, as well as maybe small commercial where all policyholders could have an app that provides them with a dashboard, easily accessed, that not only gives them access to all of their policy information, but also eventually gives them real-time feedback on how they're doing from a risk perspective.
So you can
give an assessment of how you're driving. An assessment of how safe your home or your business is. And this gives you an opportunity to actually gives the insured an opportunity to interact with you in a way that can create a very positive feedback loop. So understanding that, well, if I try to reduce how often I speed, I can benefit from that. If I try to if I try to make sure that my sprinkler system is more regularly serviced, then I can reduce my commercial property insurance premium or business interruption premium. These sorts of things are already, beginning to come online.
That's a seeable future, isn't it? Yeah.
This is not Buck Rogers, Star Wars sorts of things. Some of this is reality today, and I think could be certainly more ubiquitous within the next 10 years. Those are the companies I want to partner with, and that gives me an opportunity to provide what I would call high-touch interactions with my customers.
That's very exciting. Okay, my final question, Bob, you are an economist, so I'll ask you what everybody wants to know, and I appreciate the fact that nobody has a crystal ball, and making predictions is always makes fools out of most of us. But overall, we are affected, and agents are affected by how well the economy is doing, how well their local community is doing. What do you think? How is our economy?
Well, judging by the economic statistics that are currently out there, such as the unemployment, 3.8%, lowest it's been in 18 years, it's hard to get better than that. Most people will only see an unemployment rate that low, maybe three times in their entire life. So GDP, the economy is growing by close to a 3% clip nowadays. That's in the second quarter of this year. That's relatively robust. At the same time, I do think people do pick up on the potential uncertainties associated with rhetoric about trade, for instance, and that's being registered a little bit in some of the consumer and business confidence indices that have come out very recently. It's perhaps the case that this too shall pass. It's very difficult to predict exactly in the current political environment where we're going to wind up 6 months down the road. We have midterm elections coming up. But generally speaking, when we look at what drives the economy, it is the consumer and it is businesses that account for most of GDP. Consumer confidence is at or near about an 18-year high, and the same thing for businesses. So underpinning everything.
Let me ask you a question. Is that also true? And this is, again, an amateur's question. Is that true generally also a year or two before the onset of a recession? Do people feel confident until they don't?
Typically, yes.
Okay. I mean, I was just wondering, how much does consumer confidence really predict the future?
Yeah, if consumer confidence takes a plunge, and if business confidence takes a plunge with it, then that's likely to result in
a predictor. Yeah, that's a predictor. Right.
But it could mean a deceleration.
Right.
In growth. And so I think that as an economist, I do worry about killing the goose or injuring the goose that laid the golden egg here with self-inflicted wounds.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see how the election plays out here. It's difficult to discern whether the president's playing hardball or is posturing right now with our trade partners. But we are a very much an open and global economy.
Indeed.
And millions of people's jobs depend on international trade.
All right. Well, Bob, I am thrilled that I was able to circle back again with you. And I'm very grateful that you took time out of your busy schedule to share some time with us.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Indeed.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking Media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.